Hey everyone, it's your two favorite horror podcasters, professors, and nerds.
We're so excited to tell you about a new series from Horror Joy called Meet Your Maker.
This is a series dedicated to horror creators, their words, and their worlds.
We'll be sitting down for 30-minute interviews with some of horror's best-known authors, and some of the best authors you don't know, like Clay McLeod Chapman,
Victoria Dalpy,
Kat Silva,
John Langan,
Sadie Hartman, Mother Horror,
Emily Hughes,
Thomas Ha,
Matthew Trefon,
Jake Try,
and so many more. Whenever we do it, we can both try to do so many more at the same time.
And so many more. No. I don't think that's working.
Our goal is always to find joy in horror, and this gives us the opportunity to introduce you to new authors and creators and to discuss new books, stories, and movies with your old favorites.
This also means that we'll be dropping episodes every week.
So, get ready, yins, for more horror, more joy, more
horror joy!
Axis Mundi. Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. I mentioned a few weeks back that the Supreme Court unanimously decided a case in favor of Catholic Charities, a case I think they got wrong. But I explained that there was perhaps a silver lining in that case. I pointed out that the 9-0 majority opinion cited and quoted some good precedent, some important cases that do in fact help separate church and state. That maybe the three liberals on the court were able to kind of broker this limited opinion and in the process strengthen some important case law for church-state separation. And one example in that Catholic Charities opinion is this quote from the majority. Government actions that favor certain religions, the court has warned, convey to members of other faiths that they are outsiders, not full members of the political community. And the court is quoting, they are outsiders, not full members of the political community, an earlier Supreme Court case from 2000 called Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe, Santa Fe v. Doe, a 2000 case that is quite important. That case, my friends, is the last real win for church-state separation at the United States Supreme Court. 25 years ago. That is the last clear victory, and the other side cannot let go of it as a loss. There were some cases in between that have not been so bad. Some that could have been better. There were even some partial wins. In 2025, there was a case we won alongside another case we lost involving Ten Commandments displays. But Santa Fe was the last clear, unambiguous win for church-state separation. And in that case, the Supreme Court, a very different Supreme Court. This is a Supreme Court before John Roberts is on the court, before Sam Alito is on the court. In fact, Clarence Thomas is the only one who was on both. That court decides 6-3 that prayers before public high school football games, even when voted on by students, even when given by a student-elected chaplain, those prayers are unconstitutional. Those prayers are at a government event, and they use a government microphone to impose religion on kids who don't really have a choice about being there. Yeah, maybe some of the people in the stands don't necessarily have to go, but the students in the marching band have to be there. Students playing on the field have to be there. Students who are part of the athletic managing squad have to be there. And listen, this is Texas on a Friday night. The kids in the stand have to be there too. The peer pressure is real, as the court noted. This story is really one of abuse. The school district in this case gerrymandered policies to get around, to override the religious freedom of students, the rights and the responsibilities of families and parents to determine what religion, if any, their children should encounter, and to evade the separation of church and state. Santa Fe is a small town. It's nestled amid the oil refineries between Galveston and Houston. I actually used to live right down near there. I used to live in southeast Houston, really not far, in a little place called Seabrook. In fact, when I was called for jury foreman right after college, when I was called for jury duty right after college in Harris County and selected as jury foreman on a murder trial, it was when I was living in Seabrook, Texas, which is, you know, basically a suburb of Houston, and the first place, one of the first places you'd hit if you were driving from Galveston to Houston, not far from Santa Fe at all. And Santa Fe has about maybe 10,000 people or so back then. And again, the school itself has a history of pushing religion onto students, not just with this prayer policy. It really is kind of a dark history. In a way, this was certainly not the first controversy about separation of church and state that the school district was embroiled in. And Paul Horowitz, a law professor at the University of Alabama, wrote an article about this that I've used to help me tell the story here, and the link is in the show notes. He wrote that in 1993, a, quote, teacher handed out flyers promoting a Baptist revival meeting. When a student revealed that she was a Mormon, her teacher lectured the whole class about the, quote, non-Christian cult-like nature of Mormonism and its general evils. The teacher was subsequently reprimanded and instructed to apologize to the student, her family, and the class. Professor Horowitz writes about another controversy that ran parallel to the case here, the case involving those prayers over the loudspeakers at football games. And in that case, the school was failing to stop students from harassing other students, quote, with anti-Semitic language along the lines of Hitler missed one. The school district was failing to stop students from harassing other students with phrases like Hitler missed one. That student subsequently settled their lawsuit against the school and the family, no surprise, moved. They got out of Dodge. And in another case that Horowitz recounts, quote, the school permitted the distribution of Gideon Bibles at the school, leading to the harassment of students who declined to accept them. This practice was also halted after complaints. And as you might imagine, in a school district that has this many problems, prayer was ubiquitous at games, at graduations, and more. And at least one member of the school board, a fellow named John Couch, made clear that, quote, he would willingly face a lawsuit and even go to jail to keep prayer in the schools. I actually talk about this case in the extra material I have on my website for American Crusade, andrewlseidel.com/moreac, as in More American Crusade. That website is also in the book for American Crusade. I've not updated that recently. But I point out that many of the families who were suing in the Santa Fe Independent School District v. Doe case were Christian, and then there was an unnamed Catholic family and an unnamed Mormon family. And I bet you can guess, knowing this history, why those families chose to remain anonymous. Because of the possibility of social ostracization and violence due to militant religious attitudes. Which was, that's a line from the, from earlier version of the case. And that this is sadly typical. And it also helps explain why the narratives in church-state cases are oftentimes very one-sided. People who stand up for the separation of church and state are abused by the Christian majority, in the same way that the school policies at issue here abuse those in the religious minority and the non-religious minority. This is why the narrative in these cases is so often one-sided. You know, I mean, even in, for instance, the case from 2022 about the Bremerton assistant coach imposing his prayer on other people's kids. Not many of those kids were willing to speak out or stand up because it would hurt them, to hurt their playing time, hurt their chances to get scholarships, hurt their chances to go to college. And that's just on the minimal side, right? That's not the kids being bullied with Hitler missed one bullshit. The school district, quote, apparently neither agreed with nor particularly respected the anonymity of the unnamed Catholic family and the unnamed Mormon family in this case, and actually tried to uncover their identity, tried to out them. And you want to guess why they tried to out them? Of course, so they could pressure them. Now, one of the arguments made by the school district in this case, that was eventually rejected by the Supreme Court, was that the students voted to have these prayers. How can this be a violation of the students' rights when the students voted to have these prayers? The Supreme Court, at this time, again, very different Supreme Court, didn't buy this argument because, and this is a great line, quote, fundamental rights may not be submitted to vote. They depend on the outcome of no elections. That's what the justices wrote in that 2000 opinion, and they were quoting a 1943 opinion, the opinion which said that students cannot be forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance against their religion. So the majority doesn't get to vote away the rights of the minority. That's the whole point of rights. The Bill of Rights exists to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority. And also just, again, notice how important precedent normally is for a court, right? That's a 1943 opinion. Fundamental rights may not be submitted to vote. They depend on the outcome of no elections. Nicely worded, too. 1943 opinion that's picked up in a 2000 opinion. And then that's picked up in this 9-0 Catholic Charities case. Not that exact same line, but the opinion. And also, by the way, not only does the Bill of Rights exist to protect the minority from the tyranny of majority, and not only is it the case that fundamental rights may not be submitted to vote, they depend on the outcome of no elections. Look, high school elections are not, you know, maybe the most... They can be rigged, let's just say it. The Galveston County Daily News reported at the time that vote, which was relied on in the case, less than 10% of the students in the school actually voted on those prayers. And that's because, again, according to this news story, one of the students is quoted, there were no announcements, no notices about the vote. And one student who was willing to be named in the news, Amanda Bruce, said, quote, the election was a sham. No one even asked if we wanted an inspirational message. And listen, Amanda Bruce, if you're listening, good on you for protesting. And please reach out. I would love to hear from you about this case. Love to bring you on the show to talk about it. If you know of somebody named Amanda Bruce, or who was at one point in her life named Amanda Bruce, tell her to reach out. It's also worth noting that once the prayers were approved and voted on, the school, the government, was now in the religion business. Church and state were mixed, and the problems immediately came to a head. The superintendent, reluctantly, according to Horowitz, promised to punish any student prayer giver that proselytized during their prayer. They, quote, would be disciplined just as if they had cursed. Okay, so the first elected prayer giver bails out. She's like, no thanks. She said, quote, she did, quote, not want to be expelled from school for using the word God in a reverent manner. Fair enough. If you're going to let me say a prayer, let me say a prayer. Don't tell me what I can and can't say. I'm going to be disciplined as if I had cursed, if I proselytized. What does that even mean? The second prayer giver, the second elected prayer giver in this sham election, actually brought a whole different lawsuit claiming freedom of speech and won. So the judge enjoined the discipline threat from the superintendent and let her say whatever she wanted. But the problem is, once the government is in the religion business in the first place, it's already crossed the Rubicon. That's the problem. You don't get to have a government megaphone to push your religion onto a captive audience of other people's kids, people who are there to watch a football game. If you want to say a prayer, say a prayer. Nobody's stopping you. You just don't get to do it over the loudspeakers. If a coach wants to say a prayer, he can bow his head and say a prayer. He doesn't have to use and abuse his power to impose that prayer on other people's kids. If people in the stands want to say a prayer, bow your head and say a prayer. Say a prayer out loud. Who cares? You just don't get to use the machinery of the state to amplify it, to push it onto other people. It's worth pointing out, too, that this case features a who's who of Christian nationalists. And I promise you, there is a reason that I am talking about this case so much. It's not just that it's an interesting story. It's a who's who of Christian nationalists who fought this case. Jay Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice, one of the granddaddies of the Christian nationalist legal movement. David Cortman of the Alliance Defending Freedom. He was actually with the American Center for Law and Justice for this case. And then he joined ADF a few years later and argued the Missouri Children's Ministry case from 2017, Trinity Lutheran, and ADF's Hobby Lobby companion case. Paul Clement, the Solicitor General in George W. Bush's second term, who just has argued a host of bad cases, including intervening for the oral argument in those twin Ten Commandments cases in 2005 that I mentioned. He's sort of a freelance crusader who argued for Hobby Lobby and against marriage equality and actually argued the case out of Bremerton about the coach imposing his prayer on other people's kids. Kelly Shackelford of what would become First Liberty Institute, which brought the case about that coach and a whole bunch of others. And remember, this is 6 months before the Supreme Court asserts its supremacy by deciding the 2000 election for George W. Bush. So Santa Fe versus Doe is this seminal moment in the early stirring of the crusade that I talk about in American Crusade, how the Supreme Court is weaponizing religious freedom. And the reason that we're talking about it today is because it was a loss for the other side. That last true win for us, that last real win for our side, that was a loss for the other side. And it is a loss that is festering. They are bothered by it. John Cornyn asks Supreme Court nominees about it to this day. He was the Texas Attorney General at the time and waded into the case. And now a senator for Texas still brings it up for every Supreme Court nominee. Neil Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett. Losses like that for the other side fester. So it's important for us to defend those wins. And it's especially important because the other side wants to right that bitter wrong. They want to turn that L into a W. And they're asking the Supreme Court for help. Just the other day, First Liberty Institute, Kelly Shackelford's outfit, the outfit that brought the case about the coach imposing his prayer on other people's kids in Bremerton. First Liberty Institute asked the Supreme Court to decide this question, which I am going to abbreviate to get to the point. So there, this is a cert petition to the Supreme Court. It's when a party is asking the Supreme Court to take up the case. Remember, the Supreme Court doesn't have to take any case. They have to agree to take 99% of the cases that come their way. There are a few cases that they have to take, but most they don't have to take. They can take it if they so desire. And to convince the court to do that, you have to petition the court for certiorari. Petition for cert. Cert petition. And that, a petition for cert was filed recently at the Supreme Court that says, the questions presented are, one, whether Santa Fe Independent School District v. Doe should therefore be overruled. Again, I've abbreviated a lot of the language out of it. That's the important part. This court needs to overrule Santa Fe Independent School District. That's what they are going to be arguing. The cert petition is in the show notes. There's another question that is also dangerous. And again, who is the first name on that cert petition? Kelly Shackelford, a loser in the Santa Fe case from 25 years ago. The case at issue is Cambridge Christian School versus Florida High School Athletic Association. And believe it or not, that case actually started back about the same time as the case involving the coach imposing his prayer on other people's kids in Bremerton. Essentially, you have a Florida High School Athletic Association. This is the group that manages athletics for public schools. And because there are not enough private religious schools often join public school leagues at the state championship. Cambridge Christian School demanded the ability to broadcast a prayer before the game over the loudspeaker. The Florida High School Athletic Association said, no, you can't do that. Nobody's got the right to just push their religion using a government megaphone. We're not going to let you do that. And First Liberty wants to change that. And again, while the underlying case featured a who's who of those Christian nationalist legal crusaders that I just mentioned, I left one out. I left one name off the list, perhaps the most important one. Because that case, Santa Fe versus Doe, featured a young Brett Kavanaugh filing a brief with the Supreme Court that used, among other things, genocidal allusions to paint those of us seeking to uphold the separation of church and state as hostile, absolutist, and seeking, quote, the full extermination of private religious speech from the public schools. He used words like absolutist, hostile, Orwellian, full extermination, cleanse public schools. These charged words and phrases culminate with Brett Kavanaugh invoking Nazis and arguing that if the justices were to decide the case in favor of the plaintiffs, which they eventually did, Christians would be relegated, quote, to bottom of the barrel status in our society, below socialists and Nazis and Klan members and panhandlers and ideological and political advocacy groups of all stripes. You will be shocked, I am sure, to learn that the Supreme Court upholding the separation of church and state in that case did not relegate Christians to bottom-of-the-barrel status in our society. Not below Nazis and Klan members. Never mind that many Klan members and Nazis were Christians. So Brett Kavanaugh uses this abrasive, inflammatory language as a lawyer in the case. Yes, he's filing an amicus brief. That's a friend of the court brief. But he is arguing this case at the Supreme Court. That's what you do when you're writing an amicus brief. To argue against Santa Fe versus Doe. Against the eventual outcome, right? To argue, no, we can allow students in the majority to trample the religious freedom of students in the minority. We don't need to separate church and state. Why am I dwelling on this? Why am I spending time on this? Because another case that I talked about this term was the St. Isidore case. This was a case involving the first religious public school in the nation. This was the case that came down at the Supreme Court 4-4, a deadlock. And because it was deadlocked with no opinion, that meant that the Oklahoma Supreme Court's opinion in the St. Isidore case stood. And the Oklahoma Supreme Court struck down the nation's first religious public school as a violation of the separation of church and state. Yes, it was a charter school. Yes, it was a virtual charter school. Charter schools are public schools. That's what the Oklahoma Supreme Court said correctly. But if Barrett had been in that case, if Amy Coney Barrett had not recused herself in that case, it wouldn't have been a 4-4 decision. It almost certainly would have been 5-4, perhaps at that point 6-3 too. Who knows? Barrett recused herself because she knew one of the attorneys at the Notre Dame Religious Liberty Institute. She, in fact, was good friends with one of the attorneys. This was well known, reported by Heidi Prisbola. I spoke about this in earlier episodes. Go back and listen. Maybe we'll have Heidi on the pod one day to talk about it. We won because Barrett recused herself. And in the cert petition for Cambridge Christian School versus the Florida High School Athletic Association, the document is asking the Supreme Court, including Brett Kavanaugh, to take up this case. This case which specifically asks if Santa Fe versus Doe, a case that Brett Kavanaugh argued, should be overruled. In other words, hey Brett, can you overturn this case? I don't know about you, but that seems to me like a problem. Now, there is a standard for federal judges about whether or not they can stay on a case. There's a disqualification statute. It actually appears in the United States Code. 28 U.S.C. Section 455. We'll read Section 455B2 first. Talking about judges using the male pronoun, because of course it does. Quote, he shall also disqualify himself in the following circumstances. Where in private practice he served as lawyer in the matter in controversy, or a lawyer with whom he previously practiced law served during such association as a lawyer concerning the matter. Now, you might say, well, that statute can't apply at the Supreme Court, Andrew. I've heard that there's no binding ethics code on the Supreme Court. Now, that's partially true, but Section 455A reads, quote, any justice judge or magistrate judge of the United States shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. That is a federal statute, a law that justices are charged with upholding. Again, B2. Shall also disqualify himself where in private practice he served as a lawyer in the matter in controversy. There is also an ethical code that is supposed to be binding on these justices. And that's Canon 3. Well, excuse me. And the relevant part is Canon 3B of the Supreme Court Code of Conduct, which states that, quote, a justice should disqualify himself or herself in a proceeding in which the justice's impartiality might reasonably be questioned, that is, where an unbiased and reasonable person who is aware of all relevant circumstances would doubt that the justice could fairly discharge his or her duties. So you tell me. Brett Kavanaugh, the full extermination of private religious speech from public schools, absolutist, hostile, Orwellian, full extermination, cleanse public schools. Christians would be relegated to the bottom of the barrel status in our society below socialists and Nazis and Klan members and panhandlers. Some of you astute observers, some of you may even go read the Supreme Court Code of Conduct or read the federal disqualification statute 28 U.S.C. 455. And there is a little bit in the code about amicus briefs. It says, quote, neither the filing of a brief amicus curiae, nor the participation of counsel for amicus curiae requires a justice's disqualification. But that appears, if unclearly, to apply to parties filing an amicus in the case, not the justice filing an amicus that speaks to the question presented before the court now in a case. And the commentary attached to the ethics code does clear this up. Basically, the court allows pretty much anyone to file an amicus brief in any case. So in the commentary, what the court says is, quote, in light of the court's permissive amicus practice, amici and their counsel will not be a basis for an individual justice to recuse. So I don't think that's what is going on here. And I think that the young Brett Kavanaugh arguing against religious freedom and church-state separation in the Santa Fe v. Doe case means that he cannot serve on the court, that he must disqualify himself, that his impartiality not only is reasonably questioned, is 100% very clearly in doubt. This is a man who argued against the case being decided in the first place and who is now going to be deciding whether or not to overturn the precedent that he argued against creating in the first place. Of course, we know where he is going to stand on the issue. There is no doubt that Coach Kavanaugh is going to be in favor of overturning Santa Fe versus Doe. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Hey everyone, it's your two favorite horror podcasters, professors, and nerds.
We're so excited to tell you about a new series from Horror Joy called Meet Your Maker.
This is a series dedicated to horror creators, their words, and their worlds.
We'll be sitting down for 30-minute interviews with some of horror's best-known authors, and some of the best authors you don't know, like Clay McLeod Chapman,
Victoria Dalpy,
Kat Silva,
John Langan,
Sadie Hartman, Mother Horror,
Emily Hughes,
Thomas Ha,
Matthew Trefon,
Jake Try,
and so many more. Whenever we do it, we can both try to do so many more at the same time.
And so many more. No, I don't think that's working.
Our goal is always to find joy in horror, and this gives us the opportunity to introduce you to new authors and creators and to discuss new books, stories, and movies with your old favorites.
This also means that we'll be dropping episodes every week.
So, get ready, yins, for more horror, more joy, more
horror joy!
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.